Ah, yes. Blame Canada. This little ditty is a South Park satire classic from 1999. It's so good, it was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Original Song that year. Blame Canada. And of course, the reason the song is so ridiculously hilarious is because, of course, who in the U.S. is ever mad at Canada? I mean, blame Mexico? That's basically a campaign slogan in the U.S. during the Trump administration, which regularly blamed both domestic economic and social challenges on our neighbors to the south. But blame Canada? That is the stuff of satire. Until this. That's the sound of big rig trucks that have been occupying downtown Ottawa in Canada for the past 2 weeks. These protesters are calling themselves the Freedom Convoy, and they originally gathered to protest rules that mandated that truck drivers passing between the U.S. and Canada show proof of vaccination against COVID-19. But while many media reports continue to characterize this multi-week disruption as a protest and saying that it is led by and for truckers, well, the reality is a little more complicated. According to the Canadian outlet Global News, several of the organizers of the convoy are far-right extremists with a history of Islamophobia and racism. At the beginning of the protests, multiple participants were seen bearing swastikas and Confederate flags at the demonstrations. And on February 6, Ottawa Mayor Jim Watson declared a state of emergency. Here he is speaking with the CBC this week.
These people have stayed far too long. They're disrupting far too many lives. Someone is going to get injured or seriously killed if they don't understand the severity of the situation.
The disruptions have spread beyond Ottawa, blocking multiple parts of the border, including a bridge between Windsor, Ontario, and Detroit, Michigan, that serves as an essential part of the supply chain for the automobile industry. And the outsized effects of this movement's actions stand in sharp contrast to the fact that roughly 90% of Canadians are vaccinated and nearly 90% of Canadian truck drivers are vaccinated as well. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau emphasized the divide between the right-wing demonstrators and the vast majority of Canadians in his remarks this week.
People of Ottawa don't deserve to be harassed in their own neighborhoods. They don't deserve to be confronted with the inherent violence of a swastika flying on a street corner, or a Confederate flag, or the insults and jeers just because they're wearing a mask. That's not who Canada, who Canadians are. That's not what Canadians demonstrated over the past 2 years.
So now, if you find yourself waiting on parts to repair your used car, or you're simply feeling a little nervous about global democracy, well, it might in fact be okay to blame Canada. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and today on The Takeaway, we start with the trouble at the northern border. I sat down with Regina Bateson, an assistant professor of public and international affairs at the University of Ottawa, and I asked her, what is going on there?
First, there was a protest, and there are still elements of a normal protest to what's been going on here. But there's also an occupation. There are blockades that have spread across the country. There are ties with right-wing extremist groups, including white supremacist groups. And now there's a significant element of foreign intervention, both political support and financial support coming from the United States. So there are multiple different things happening at once here on the ground. And meanwhile, local residents caught in the middle of it all.
So let's back up and walk through each part of that. I think it's really useful. So let's start with, it began with how you described a normal protest. Who was protesting what here?
So I should say there were elements of a normal protest to how this started. And by normal protest, I mean, you know, people on foot with signs trying to communicate some kind of message and make their voices heard. That's been part of what was happening here. But even in that initial beginning of the events, there was also a well-organized convoy that had been planned in advance, that had been traveling across Canada. Authorities knew they were coming here to Ottawa. They knew very clearly that their stated intent was nothing short of revolution, and they proposed an unconstitutional seizure of power. So it was clear from the beginning that this was a well-organized event. But as in any national capital, people here are familiar with protests and, you know, people who make demands. We're no strangers to contentious politics. And so certainly those first few days, that Friday, January 28th, January 29th, which was a Saturday, we saw people roll into town loudly, trucks, pickup, you know, big rigs, pickup trucks, lots of flags, all different flags. And I personally was kind of caught up in the convoy that first day inadvertently. And I thought, this is a big demonstration. This is loud. It's significant. It's big. But I think people expected, you know, the average citizen here expected that the group would come, demonstrate, and then go. And in fact, they stayed. And so then going into that Sunday into Monday, which was like the 30th into 31st of January, we started to see that despite having taken a really hardline aggressive stance with other protests that have happened here in the past and sit-ins and very peaceful forms of demonstration by other groups, particularly Black and Indigenous groups here in the past, despite that, the Ottawa police were taking a really hands-off approach to this group, and they had sort of stood back and allowed them to bring their big rigs into the center of Ottawa, into the downtown core, right next to Parliament, right next to the Prime Minister's offices. And there they'd gotten installed, and they weren't ticketing them, they weren't towing. And at the same time, there was really a lot of hate speech and harassment and intimidation toward local residents happening. So that Sunday into Monday is when it really morphed into sort of an occupation and what feels to a lot of people who live here like a hostage-taking situation. There's a strong element of extortion to what's been happening.
All right. Initially was being described as a trucker protest, but nothing about how you're talking about this feels to me like that. What is missing in how, at least initially, how this was framed?
Yeah, it's not just truckers. It's not just a protest. And it's not just about COVID. I think that is really important to get across. So there are some people who are truckers who are here, and there are some big rigs. There are also lots of people who've come with, you know, private vehicles, pickup trucks, the roving pickup trucks who drive around town, intimidating people are in some ways more terrifying, I think, for local residents. They definitely feel like more of a rogue element. And it's unpredictable when and where you're going to encounter them. And then there are, you know, organizers with political aims. So there is a right-wing populist and extremist movement here in Canada. It's existed before this. Unfortunately, will continue to exist and probably be emboldened after this. So there are folks with political aims who are not truck drivers. The ostensible trigger or initial organizing catalyst for this event was the imposition of a vaccine mandate for truck drivers to be able to cross between Canada and the United States without being quarantined in Canada. But that is really just a small part of what's being demanded by folks on the ground. They've demanded the end to all COVID-related restrictions in Canada. They've demanded the resignation of Justin Trudeau. They have proposed forming a ruling junta with other government actors here. So there's really quite a wide range of demands. And I would say this goes far beyond COVID. Also because they've really challenged and upended norms around how society and politics operate here. So they've come into a place where there's a great deal of respect for process, procedures, norms, calm deliberation, consultation, and they've torn that all up. And they're playing by a completely different rule book.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of late night comedian jokes write themselves. Like what is the far right of, you know, in Canada, what you have to pay for your own health insurance or something? Like, there's a way I think that this is stunning, I think, for those of us south of the Canadian border, because Canada is consistently represented in sort of, you know, U.S., I would say, maybe progressive U.S. circles as, you know, this sort of, you know, progressive promised land to which we could escape if the unfortunate, you know, political candidate is chosen in any given election, right? Canada always emerges in this, you know, kind of narrative. And yet I hear you saying that this is a violation of some kinds of norms, but also a continuation of a pre-existing ideological formation.
Well, to be very clear, the events that have unfolded in Ottawa and across the country in what has been called a nationwide insurrection are stunning for Canadians too. Absolutely stunning, deeply unnerving, unsettling. And there is a far-right populist movement here that is not dissimilar from the movements that exist in the United States. And in fact, there are ties between the two sets of groups that go back well before this. But the thing is that it's a much smaller percentage of the population here, and also that the media ecosystem is very different. So there isn't the same level of attention given to them. They haven't had significant political power or allies really in mainstream politics to date. You know, there's no equivalent of Fox News. There's no equivalent of Breitbart here. So the impact and power of that extreme right has been much smaller here historically. And it's really important to note that the vast majority of the country does not share their views. So when Justin Trudeau stood up earlier, a few days ago in the House of Commons and said, you know, this is not who we are as Canadians, that's true. He was right. The vast majority of Canadians disagree with the demands of the convoy and the tactics they've been using. But the fact remains that, you know, like it or not, whether this is quote unquote who Canadians are or not, the convoy is here, they're on the ground, they are threatening residents, they are threatening democracy, they are disrupting critical infrastructure. At this point, they have gained a worldwide reputation and notoriety. They're sparking parallel movements elsewhere, from New Zealand to Paris, and they've really attained a degree of political power that was previously unthinkable.
So what is the government currently doing? And do you have a sense, because as you're talking about that, as you're talking about the spark and the way that it becomes a catalyst in other nations, even if it is almost a vanishingly small minority of Canadians or within Canadian public opinion, an attempt to crush it outright seems to me also precisely the kind of catalyzing moment that could have global effects.
Yeah, so there are a variety of sort of less confrontational tactics around the management of this that have certainly been debated. I mean, other cities in Canada, such as Toronto, Quebec City, have been more successful in preventing large vehicles from becoming installed in their downtown core and from preventing people from taking territory. I mean, the key mistake, and the Ottawa Police Services agree at this point, that the key mistake was allowing the big rigs into the core of Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And a lot could have been prevented with just a few concrete barriers 2 weeks ago. But right now, you're right that the authorities are kind of backed into a corner, especially because there's a strong division of power and strong federalism in Canada. And so this, believe it or not, this nationwide insurrection has largely been kicked into the laps of municipal police forces here. And so, for example, in Ottawa, the Ottawa police have been saying clearly for days, that they are outnumbered. They do not have the resources to control the situation. They are a moderately sized police force that's usually responsible for a quite calm and well-behaved municipality of about a million people. And they are now trying to contain was essentially an insurrection or an attempted revolution. And they have been asking for more personnel to be able to manage the situation differently. For example, to actually be able to cut off the supplies of fuel that are getting into the area, that are refueling those trucks and keeping them heated in the frigid Canadian winter. And they just don't have the personnel. They've been trying to manage this with something like between 500 to 700 officers total working in shifts. That's not really very many when you split it out by shifts. They've placed a request for 1,800 additional personnel, including 1,600 more officers. And that was placed on Monday, February 7th. And the request has not been filled. 1,800 more people have not materialized in Ottawa. So the convoy continues onward with their mission. They've escalated, they've intensified their behavior. They've now gone out to the airport in Ottawa where they were kind of cruising around in a performative way, making their presence known, flexing their muscle. As we know, the blockade of the Ambassador Bridge is really very significant and is essentially paralyzing a fourth of all trade between Canada and the United States. And meanwhile, the response is slow from the authorities here.
Just one last question. You've really made clear how anxious and distressing, anxiety-producing and distressing this is for residents. And especially as you were talking about these, the smaller pickups sort of driving through towns and that sense of not only being held hostage, which is bad enough in one's own town, but also being intimidated. I'm wondering, have there been acts of either verbal harassment or even of physical harassment and violence that we need to know about?
Yes. So it's also important to note that residents feel quite abandoned. So you might think of Canada as a place that's like that's the home of big government. I mean, that might be the impression that one would have of Canada in the United States. But the experience of residents on the ground has actually been one of abandonment, particularly for people who live in this downtown core area, which is a densely populated residential neighborhood that butts right up against Parliament in downtown Ottawa. And the city councilors have been doing what they can, but there really has not been much protection for residents. And I should also say that the Ottawa police are overwhelmed. So they have been dealing with coordinated attacks on the 911 system, attempts to flood the 911 system with irrelevant calls so that true calls cannot get through. When people call the non-emergency number, there have been reports that they're being put on hold or they're having to wait. So there's been difficulty in even documenting what's happening. But among what's happened, yes, the Ottawa police have gotten reports of hate crimes. They've opened hate crime investigations. There's been a lot of hate speech and harassment, particularly targeted toward anyone who's Black, Indigenous, an immigrant, wears a hijab, LGBTQ, happens to be outside in a mask. There are any number of reasons why people are being targeted who are just average residents of the city. There was also an attempted arson of a residential building downtown that was really very disturbing. People believe that it was retaliation because the residents of that building had asked truckers to stop honking. And so there's video of people going into that building, lighting a fire in the lobby, securing the exit doors from the building to trap the residents inside, and then fleeing themselves. And it is only by the grace of God that someone has not died yet. I mean, people really feel as though the police are trying to wait this out and law enforcement is trying to wait this out. But every day that goes on, people here are in danger and Canadian democracy is in danger.
Regina Bateson is an assistant professor of public and international affairs at the University of Ottawa. Thank you for being here and please stay safe.
Thanks very much.
After just 2 weeks, messages of support have spread far beyond Canada and inspired copycat movements, including in New Zealand.
Roads blocked, commuters stranded, and protesters taking over the streets. Those were the scenes in central Wellington after a convoy of trucks, cars, and motorbikes converged on Parliament. They'd called themselves anti-mandate and freedom protesters.
Journalist Jenna Lynch of News Hub observed their local demonstrations from a distance this week.
It's been advised that all of the staff in the building don't go near the protesters because there has been quite a volatile situation. And normally, you'll know this, Mel, we do go down to all of these protests, but this particular group has been pretty nasty. Not all of them, obviously. There are some protesters out there that are just singing and having a good time, but we've been kind of copping a lot of abuse, and it's been. Deemed it's not super safe to go down there.
Shira Frankel is a technology reporter for the New York Times and author of An Ugly Truth. She's been following these developments online.
As the protests in Canada have entered their second week, we've really seen activists from all over the world and even some local politicians take up this cause and try to adapt it to local movements. So, for instance, in countries ranging from Australia to Germany, local politicians have called for far-right activists to launch a similar protest in their country. And it's coming at this pivotal time where a lot of countries are considering whether they're going to have vaccine requirements or vaccine mandates. And people are getting really fired up around this, both people who want to see vaccine mandates and people who don't. And so it's become a real moment, I think, globally, where people are looking at what's happening in Canada and wondering how they can interpret it for their own motivation at home.
Again, it's important to note here, the majority of Canadians do not support these protests.
What's happening in Canada seems to be drawing in people from sort of across the political spectrum who are upset about mandates. And while it started in the anti-vaccine community, I've now seen it spread across Telegram groups and Facebook groups where people are just upset at being forced or mandated to do anything. I think that's one thing that's been really interesting watching this, is that it's no longer, I would say, specific to the anti-vaccine movement. There are people who are writing in and saying they, you know, they voted for Biden in the last election and they consider themselves Democrats, but they're really angry about vaccine mandates. And so they support the truckers in Canada and want to take part in a local movement.
The range of supporters in the United States include Elon Musk, who tweeted out "Canadian truckers rule" on January 27th, and former President Donald Trump, who put out a statement of support last Friday. There's also been some support for the Canadian protests among U.S. Republican lawmakers.
We've seen some local officials speak out in support of what's happening in Canada. I have seen politicians sharing photos and videos of the Canadian truckers and expressing admiration for that. I have not seen Republican officials calling for a similar kind of protest here in the United States at the moment. That seems to be limited to sort of the far right groups and anti-vaccine activists.
Some of these Republican lawmakers are also now targeting GoFundMe after the fundraising platform blocked $10 million in Canadian dollars raised for the Freedom Convoy. The blockage has to do with violating the rule against the promotion of violence and harassment. Several lawmakers said they would launch inquiries into the GoFundMe, including Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, Senator Ted Cruz, and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Here's Senator Ted Cruz speaking on Fox News last week.
Well, listen, it is theft on the part of GoFundMe. Let me say the Canadian truckers are heroes. They are patriots and they are marching for your freedom and for my freedom. They are those truck drivers that, God bless them, they're defending Canada, but they're defending America as well.
And Shira Frankel has seen some online chatter of groups inspired by the Canadian trucker movement to start their own American Freedom Convoy right here in the U.S.
In the U.S., anti-vaccine activists were the first to seize on this, and we saw their local Facebook groups, their Telegram channels really light up and become inspired by what was happening in Canada. And now they've kind of pivoted from wanting to support the efforts in Canada by sending food or sending money to trying to plan something here locally and launching a similar convoy here in the United States that would convene on Washington, D.C., and try to block the Capitol, much in the way that these Canadian truckers have blocked Ottawa.
And what started as a small anti-vaccine mandate protest in Canada's capital city could have reverberating political implications in the U.S. and far beyond in the coming months.
The convoy that's happening in Canada, I think, has really highlighted how organized the anti-vaccine movement has become. I've been reporting on the anti-vaccine movement for years now, and we've seen their numbers grow during the pandemic. But I think this shows just how capable they are of organizing an effective protest. And I think that they will be a force to be reckoned with in the U.S. Ahead of the midterm elections. They're planning a number of protests across the U.S., even in the coming months, against vaccine mandates. And I think they're a really fascinating group to watch because of how large they've grown and how well organized they seem to be.
Our thanks to New York Times reporter Shira Frankel for speaking with us on this story.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.